This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo.
A young college student was murdered during a robbery at an Albuquerque, New Mexico gas station in July 1976. And when no witnesses came forward, it appeared the senseless slain would remain a mystery. At that time, Albuquerque had one of the highest per capita crime rates in the country, and people were afraid to help the police. Detective Greg McAleese, thanks, Kevin, knew something innovative would be necessary to encourage the public to get involved and help solve the murder.
McAleese, who had worked for a newspaper before joining the Albuquerque Police Department, conceived the idea of producing a video reenactment of the homicide, guaranteed anonymity for anyone who was willing to call him with information, and he put up a reward from his own pocket to encourage someone to provide a lead that would help identify those responsible for the crime. The plan worked. Two men were arrested within 72 hours and charged with the murder and a string of armed robberies. The Albuquerque Police Department later allowed a group of citizens to establish the first ever Crime Stoppers program. Crime Stoppers is now an international organization with local chapters around the world.
Peter McGee is a board member with Nanaimo and District Crime Stoppers, and Constable Gary O'Brien is Nanaimo RCMP spokesman and police coordinator for the Crime Stoppers program. They're with us in the studio today. Welcome, guys.
Hello,
Peter, you've received a Provincial Crime Stoppers Award for work you've been doing on behalf of the organization, and you're Crime Stopper of the Year in British Columbia. Congratulations.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Maybe we can start, Peter, by having you give us an overview of what Crime Stoppers is doing.
Okay. Well, the whole idea behind Crime Stoppers is just an anonymous way to provide information leading to... any wrongdoing, really, any crime or anything like that, that you have information about, but you'd like to provide that information in an anonymous way to not put your own name on the line or anything like that. So that's why the program's in place.
Okay, and Gary, how does the value of that show up within our community, for example?
The value shows up in solving crimes, giving a sense of safety to our community, and showing the people that the program works through. Since our program's been started in March of 1990, we have recovered over $1 million in stolen property and over $9 million in drugs, and we've made almost 400 arrests based on the Crime Stoppers program solely. And the key to the program is that these people never have to provide their name. The anonymity is always protected. And that's the success of the program. Some people are scared to come in and talk to the police for various reasons. They may know the people who they are, but they never have to provide their name, and they never have to go to court and give testimony.
Well, that was one of the things. In fact, when I looked at, read a little bit about Crime Stoppers online and read the original story, the start of the organization, that it noted that Albuquerque had one of the highest per capita crime rates, and people were afraid to help the police. And so it was one of the reasons why they were unable to solve that original crime that Crime Stoppers was involved with.
Brilliant idea. And now it's in over 21 countries. And in fact, it's quite interesting because in some countries, one in particular is Holland, is that they don't even offer rewards. It's a social conscience of the people in their community, realizing that they want to make their community safe.
I read also that the awards are paid out of donations that Crime Stoppers receives from the public. Peter, can you tell us a little more about the kind of inner workings, I guess, of Crime Stoppers? You're a board member.
I am a board member. As far as the inner workings, I don't know if, Gary, you might be better off. I'm just sort of, I've been a board member for a little over a year now, and sort of the role that I've played thus far has been sort of the resident young guy. I've sort of gone around to, different conferences and different local boards and just discussed ways to use new technology, like social internet networking platforms like YouTube and Facebook and those, how to use those to benefit the program. But as far as the inner workings for tips and that would be...
Gary, give us a sense of that.
Sure. Basically, Crime Stoppers, it's a cooperative program involving the community, the media, and the police. We don't receive any government funding at all. And it's administered by a volunteer board, people working in the community and come together and seeing the ways that we can improve the Crime Stoppers program.
And these are local boards?
These are local boards. We have about 15 or 16 members on the board. Mm-hmm. And it's a registered charity. And it relies solely on community support. And any donations that are provided, of course, is a registered charity, so you would get a tax receipt. It goes towards paying tipsters, running the board, giving training to our members. For example, going to the local conference where Peter got his provincial award.
What does a tipster get in the way of reward, just out of curiosity?
Well, the tipster can get upwards of $2,000, okay? And that's for on a crime of a very serious nature. A lot of the tips are paid out. It's really, it's based on the crime and how significant the tip was. And once the tipster calls in, they're given a password that's only unique to them. So they never, of course, have to provide their name.
Yes. I imagine a fair few people phone in simply because of a concern that there's a dangerous situation going on, or they've observed, like you said, stolen goods or drugs or something like that.
Absolutely. A lot of the tips we get, they may not even have a local implication. They may be at provincial level. For example, with the recent gang violence we've seen in the Lower Mainland, we'll get some information forwarded to us because the person has been to the Lower Mainland. So then what we do is we disseminate that tip to the appropriate agency to deal with it.
This is People First Radio, an initiative of Columbian Center Society, broadcasting on CHLY 101.7 FM radio across the islands and streaming online at chly.ca. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Jan. We're joined in the studio by Nanaimo and District Crime Stoppers Board Member Peter McGee and RCMP Constable Gary O'Brien.
Week's gone fast, hasn't it? Yeah. Well, my name is Peter McGee, and Scott Mills and I today are here to talk to you about Facebook and YouTube and MySpace as internet platforms to expand your Crime Stopper, your local Crime Stoppers program. So how we're going to do that, first of all, we're going to show you what we've done so far individually. We've actually only just met at this conference, so it's interesting anyway. So we're going to show you what we've done individually from our local areas, and then we're going to show you how to do it step by step in your area. So it's incredibly practical, and glad you all decided to come.
Hello, and welcome to this Facebook group site devoted to Nanaimo and District Crime Stoppers. My name is Peter McGee. I'm the host of this site, and I established this Facebook group to promote the Crime Stoppers program, which is a great idea. The whole idea behind Crime Stoppers is bringing together the media, public, and police to combat crime. So if you're interested in Crime Stoppers at all, please join this Facebook group and contribute your ideas and opinions and your questions right there.
The BC Crime Stoppers Association was created in 1994 as the provincial voice for the 43-member programs across the province. At this year's provincial conference in Vernon, Nanaimo and District Crime Stoppers board member Peter McGee was given the Crime Stopper of the Year Award. Peter has been traveling across BC and North America for the past year, providing lectures and training about engaging the younger generation in Crime Stopper programs. Peter, we just heard an audio clip from your presentation. Perhaps you could just tell us what you're doing with, what is this Facebook, YouTube stuff all about that you're presenting and developing?
Okay, well, sort of the idea that I'm basing this on is that Crime Stoppers itself, like many programs, is made up of many professionals, and there's a new generation coming up, a group of people that need to be included in things like Crime Stoppers in order for it to keep working the way that it should and as strong as it is. But the difference with that generation that's coming up is there's a whole new method of communication, which is using things like Facebook and YouTube. And if an organization like Crime Stoppers can get into these mediums and start putting the message out there through that angle, then I feel that we'd make a bigger impact with the new generation, being millennials or Generation Y, whatever you want to call them, us, we'd have a bigger impact and get more of us on board. So that's sort of why I'm doing what I'm doing. So for instance, the most recent conference, the one you just spoke of, where I received an award, which was very nice, the lecture that I gave there was divided into two parts, one of which being the new internet social networking platforms, YouTube and MySpace and Facebook. And the other half was just general best practices for dealing with young people. You know, things like going into schools and how to make the biggest impact and make the best use of your time going in there. So, like I said before, I feel as though I'm kind of the resident young guy with the program, and for that reason, people are very open to what I have to say, which has been great. I've really enjoyed it.
What are some of the things that have changed? You talked about, you know, best practices with young people. What are some of the things that have changed that may be different now as compared with 10 or 15 or 20 years ago?
Well, as far as comparison, I'm not really sure. 20 years ago, I was two. So, But some of the best practices that I talk about anyway, one of them is, just for an example, when you're speaking to a group of young people, try to make it sound not like a lecture. Like, we're telling you how it is, and this is the way it's going to be. And the reason for that, one of the reasons for that, I think, is that as a student, youth are lectured to all day, every day. So if it sounds too much like a lecture, they might just tune you out and not really retain any of the information that you're giving them. Instead, things like workshops or any manner in which their input can be taken in and appreciated, and they can feel that they have not only a stake in what's going on, but input, and it's being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. And it's true that this is how everyone communicates. The young people, my youngest daughter's 18, and she does never read a newspaper, but she's pretty up on what's going on through the whatever you're doing on the Facebook thing, which I unfortunately don't really understand, but I'm willing to learn. What was I going to say? I lost myself there, Kevin.
Gary, I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier you're talking about gang violence and tips related to gang violence. One thing that I've noticed in watching news stories being presented is that things about people that have been arrested or people that indeed have died in apparent gang violence, things that they've posted about themselves are rapidly available. For example, pictures of individuals. I read something about, you know, I guess it would be police doing an investigation. Don't quote me on this. I'm sorry if I've got the facts wrong. But we're also monitoring some of the things that were being said on Facebook in terms of responding to certain deaths that had happened, et cetera. How have social networking sites affected policing in a general way?
Well, it's a good point, because the police, we have to be aware of the information available on the internet. And it's amazing what information people are putting out on themselves, be it pictures, personal data. And this information is often used in criminal investigations. And you mentioned the gang violence. And this is one way where the police, we've educated ourselves, we've gone to these social networking sites and constantly are monitoring them. For example, with the Twitter site, we've recently launched that through our eDivision Communications. So we're in live contact with information that we need to get out and also back from the public to help solve crimes.
Twitter becomes, in a sense, I suppose, almost like a reverse police radio, in a sense. You know, this is what's happening and the word goes out, you know?
Absolutely, and we'll have somebody on that site. Mm-hmm. So it's live in the sense that there's somebody actually there putting information in and receiving it back.
Peter, in terms of YouTube, is the YouTube approach simply to take a video clip and put it on YouTube? Is that what you mean by the use of YouTube, or is there something additional?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many of these social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace and YouTube, and they all have specific applications that they're designed for. Like you said, YouTube is a video site. It's primarily made for that. So, for example, the clips that you played a little bit earlier, we were able to get those clips onto YouTube within a couple of minutes, and it's the ease of doing it that makes it so attractive. And really, anyone with a digital camera or a webcam on their laptop can upload a video very, very quickly, and it's just making use of the speed that is the internet and the flow of communication that's moving so quickly, and just using that to our advantage.
The Nanaimo Daily News reported on Tuesday that several actors volunteered their time last week to help create a Crime Stoppers video. Lisa Marie Young was only 21 when she disappeared on Canada Day weekend in 2002. The case of her disappearance turned cold after Young left a nightclub in a red Jaguar with a group of people and attended several house parties. Police hope the exposure will prompt someone to step forward. Now, that was from an article in the Daily News by reporter Danielle Bell. Constable Gary O'Brien, Crime Stoppers has helped to solve some very serious crimes over the years. This is an example of a reenactment being created. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little more about how those reenactments come to be and how decisions are made around those things.
Yeah, what I started looking at is my involvement with Crime Stoppers and seeing that we could take it to a different level. So it involved partnerships with Shaw TV and our local amateur theater groups. We're always looking for acting bits. And we've got some very significant incidents that have gone unsolved. For example, Lisa Marie's been missing almost 7 years now, and that's the most recent. So with that, we had local actors. I wrote a script up. We did the voiceover, worked closely with Shaw TV, Jocelyn Matwee, their video journalist, and she used her expertise to bring it all together. You also, the very significant condo fires on Stewart Avenue and the old train station on Selby, we documented that one. And we also did an incident in Cedar where a woman was seriously assaulted after picking up a hitchhiker. And this is a great way because it's another avenue so that people can get that message out and see, actually visualize what happened instead of the written word or listening to it.
Actually, I just read in the Globe and Mail on the weekend a cold case out of Toronto that had been, some woman had been murdered and it was 17 years old and they did a reenactment of the scene. And lo and behold, they apprehended the guy who had done the crime and through this video reenactment. It's pretty interesting.
These reenactments are great because, as they say, sometimes cases go cold, but we have to bring it back to life. And there's a little piece of the information that may be missing. And somebody may see that, and it'll jog a memory or lead to a discussion with somebody else. And the next thing you know, we've got an active tip, and the members have an arrest, and they've solved a case.
Peter McGee, how did you get involved in all of this? How is it that you've ended up traveling around to different Crime Stoppers conferences or chapters and training them in the use of Crime Stoppers with, as you say, millennials or Generation Y? What brought you into this work?
Well, a lot of it was right place at the right time, I think. Last year I completed a degree in criminology from Malaspina, now Vancouver Island University. And through that program, when you do a four-year degree, you enter into a practicum or internship with sort of the field of your choice or the employer of your choice. And I decided to go into Crime Stoppers. At the time, I also was interested in working with the school district, so the two of them sort of mended together, and that's how I ended up doing this. After graduation, I decided to, I mean, I liked the people on the board so much that that I decided to keep on going with it. And so what happened is last year I went to the BC conference in Revelstoke and met a man named Steve Walrath, who's the immediate past president of Crime Stoppers International.
Okay.
And he does lecturing on these generational differences. So I spoke with him about that. And after that, he had invited me to be a lecturer at the International Crime Stoppers conference in Des Moines, Iowa, which I did. And it just sort of spun out from there. And since I got back from Iowa, I've been sort of asked to come to different places, and that's where I am now. So,
okay. We have just a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Constable Gary O'Brien?
Just to remember, a good reminder to the public, Crime Stoppers receives no government funding. We rely solely on donations, and these donations go, one, to solving crime, keeping our community safe, and keeping our board active. And without that, we couldn't exist.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society, broadcast on Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of these organizations.